This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. It is May 31st, 2019. Today is the very last day of National Masturbation Month, in which we've been celebrating self-pleasure all over the place, all over the internet, and I know my special sponsor, the Pleasure Chest, has had a bunch of events that have all been dedicated to self-pleasure. I mean, let's face it, we're not going to stop masturbating because it's the end of Masturbation Month. But I do feel like I have the perfect guest to kind of bring Masturbation Month to a close. Let me tell you about her. Vanessa Marin is a licensed psychotherapist specializing in sex therapy. She's here to help you stop feeling embarrassed about sex and start having way more fun in the bedroom. She has a bachelor's degree in human sexuality and sociology from Brown University and a master's degree in counseling psychology. She writes for the New York Times, Allure, and Life Hacker, and has been featured over 1,000 times in major publications like O, the Oprah Magazine, Harper's Bazaar, Refinery 29, and Real Simple. Vanessa specializes in online programs that help you transform your sex life from ordinary to extraordinary, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Through her courses like The Passion Project, A Couple's Blueprint to Rediscovering Desire and Reigniting the Spark, and Finishing School, Learn How to Orgasm, she finds immense joy in spreading the message that we all deserve more from our sex lives. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Vanessa.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
We're celebrating the final day of Masturbation Month, where I feel like there's actually been a lot of good press and dialogue about self-pleasure and solo pleasure. But before we dive into that, what made you decide to become a sex therapist?
Oh, yes. So this traces back to actually my parents' attempt to have the talk with me. So I remember I was about 12 years old at the time. We were going home from my grandma's house, or we just had family dinner, and my mom was driving, and I see her look at me in the rearview mirror, and she said, "So if you have any questions about, you know, you can ask me now." So it was really obvious that she was talking about sex, even though she didn't actually even say it. But it was also very obvious to me that even though she was asking me if I had any questions, I was really not supposed to ask any questions.
Right.
And I remember thinking, even at that young age, I was really curious about sex. I was starting to hear things on the playground. I had a lot of questions. And my parents and I had always been really close. There had always been a sort of open door policy about talking about pretty much anything. And so I remember just this very intense feeling of, God, why is this so embarrassing? Why are we not supposed to talk about it? Like, I do have questions. I want to ask things. What's so wrong about this? And I obviously had no clue as a 12-year-old that the field of sex therapy existed. But I just remember that moment so clearly. And it really cemented this idea in me that I want to help people be able to have these kinds of conversations. And that's really what all of my work boils down to. is trying to create a world where we can talk about sex openly and honestly and as casually as, you know, where we want to go for our next vacation or what we want to do for our birthday. It really all boils down to just trying to have better conversations about it.
And when you were growing up, besides that awkward car ride, did you have any kind of comprehensive sex ed, like in school, for example?
Absolutely not. I grew up in California, so it was pretty liberal, and I feel like I probably had a good sexual education compared to a lot of people. But what I remember was being trapped in a little portable classroom in sixth grade. The boys and the girls got separated. We watched some sort of video about the babies being born, and we got handed a little mini secret deodorant. That was pretty much the
oh my god, that's amazing detail.
The totality, yeah. I still remember that little tiny secret deodorant. I was very embarrassed about the prospect of having to now start wearing deodorant. But that was really it. And I remember I actually had this very fierce debate with a couple of friends of mine where we were debating what sex actually was. And I thought that sex meant that a woman would lie down on top of a man and they would just kind of take a nap together. Like, I had no idea what the actual movement of it was. It was just kind of a woman is on top of a man. And we also had another bet about how many holes does a woman have down there. I bet an entire dollar that there were two, and I lost that one. So, yeah, it was terrible. I really didn't grow up learning anything and just, yeah, did not get any sort of education or foundation that I think we all deserve to have.
I'm interested because you specialize in these online courses in the ways in which technology has really changed the landscape of mental and physical health care. I mean, we now have this thing called telemedicine. We now have lots of people doing therapy or coaching or counseling online. What, for you, what are the differences between working with someone in person and working with someone online?
Well, for me, in building my business, what it came down to was the specific topics that I wanted to work with people on. So I am a licensed psychotherapist. I had to do all this training that really had nothing to do with sex. It was more general psychotherapy training. And so when I was doing psychotherapy with people, it did feel really important for us to be one-on-one in the room and just be able to have that interaction, you know, live together in the room. Then once I finished my training and I actually could open my own practice and I started working with sexual issues, I definitely felt, you know, it's still very beneficial to be able to meet with people one-on-one, but I also understood that, unfortunately, sex is a really difficult topic for so many people, and it was really challenging for most people to go into an office and meet with a total stranger and talk about the most intimate details of their lives. And I would hear my clients say things all the time like, you know, I'm just worried about running into someone that I know in your waiting room. And they, you know, just felt very embarrassed. It felt like a very high bar. So that's why I started thinking that online courses could be a good option for sexual education, because it would give people the privacy and the comfort of their own homes, but could hopefully give them some more bravery and courage to tackle a topic that might be really difficult for them to do face to face.
I mean, it's a really interesting idea that therapy itself, as you said, can be stigmatizing. It can be intimidating. People can, you know, freak out about it. But this particular issue, I think, is so stigmatized that it prevents people from actually walking in the door.
Absolutely. And I would really recognize each person who did land in my office. I knew how much courage it took for them to get there. And so, yeah, I really just wanted to try to find ways that I could make this work more accessible to more people, and that we could help remove that stigma around working on your sex life, remove the stigma that you only go to sex therapy if things are really, really terrible or something's horribly wrong with you. So that felt the fact that I could reach a much bigger audience by doing online courses felt so important to me, that that's what really pulled me in that direction and has kept me there for so many years.
And then do you also do one-on-one stuff online in addition to the courses?
I do. I offer video coaching. So I work with people over Skype. And again, that was sort of for the comfort issue. A lot of people, originally it first started because a client asked me, hey, could we do this over video chat instead? And I realized, hey, this does work really well where we can still have, you know, we're having a face-to-face interaction. And so there's still a great element of connection there. And I also realized that I could work with people in areas of the country, areas of the world where they wouldn't have access to a sex therapist. I mean, you know, sex therapists were pretty few and far between, especially if you live in a small town somewhere or a very, you know, a country that maybe doesn't have any of them. It allowed me to work with people that just wouldn't be able to access those resources otherwise.
And I think as the culture has shifted, we are doing more and more things online. You know, people are working through video conferencing. People are being in touch with their loved ones through Skype or FaceTime. So I think that like we're getting more used to how to build connection with technology than maybe we once were. Do you agree with that?
I do. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not a perfect solution. And there are times and certain circumstances where meeting with someone in person can be better. But I think that it can be a really great resource for a lot of people in a lot of circumstances. And I do think that we are getting very used to living our lives online. And I think if that's going to be something that makes people feel more comfortable seeking sex therapy, then we should definitely meet them where they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think whenever I read that people are like against telemedicine and they're like, no, no, this isn't where we should be going, I just think this is an access issue and not everyone has access to quality health care. And some people have to drive 2 hours and don't have a car. And so it really is about making it more accessible to a larger group of people than those who live in, you know, medium sized and large cities or who live on the coasts.
Absolutely. Yeah. The accessibility was a really big part of it for me. And even like physical accessibility as well. Like I started my practice in San Francisco. It was in a rickety old Victorian building with a super narrow staircase that was completely inaccessible to anybody who wasn't able-bodied. So, you know, for me, that was another big part of it. I can't see anybody who can't physically make it into this office. And that was another big part of it for me.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about, including female orgasms, which is perfect because it's still Masturbation May.
My favorite month.
We're going to take a break, hear from our sponsors. I want to tell you guys what's coming up at the Pleasure Chest. As you may know, they have this program called Pleasure Ed, all these free sex ed classes in their various locations. In New York City, June 5th, Suck It, Lick It, Love It. Oral Sex for Everyone. On June 12th, Butt Sex Basics. In Chicago, June 2nd, Bondage Boutique, and June 5th, Butt Sex Basics. In Los Angeles, June 2nd, look who it is. It's me. I'm doing a whole discussion on queer femme identity and sexuality. And it's part of to kick off Pride Month here in LA. So I don't want you to miss that. June 2nd, it's in the afternoon. And then June 5th will be BDSM Basics. You can go to pleasurechest.com, click on events to find out about these events and more. And while you're there, why don't you get yourself something nice? Let's take a break, and when we come back, more with Vanessa Marin. Do you know what the month of May represents? Why, May is Masturbation Month. You knew that. We all know that self-care is sexy, and solo sex play is part of self-care. So join the Pleasure Chest as they dive deep into all things masturbation this month. They'll be going live on Instagram all month with free online classes centering self-care and self-pleasure to get you more in touch with yourself and all the benefits masturbation can bring. On May 10th, they'll be exploring femme dominance. May 17th, sex in your cycle. May 24th, expanding your orgasms through solo play. And May 31st, sex toys for the curious. All these live workshops will air at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And during those live classes, there will be specials to take advantage of. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram to check out all information on these classes and more. And of course, go to pleasurechest.com to find out about in-store Pleasure Ed classes, their new products, and of course, their reliable, great customer service.
Hey, Dylan, guess what?
What's that, Ginger?
I'd love for you to come with me on this amazingly sex-positive, queer, and polyam-friendly, kink-aware, all-inclusive resort vacation in paradise.
Oh, really? This trip sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Ginger A. Bentham stamp of approval?
It has the sexiest name. It's called The Swing Set Takes Desire. It takes place in Cancun, Mexico, at Desire Riviera Maya, November 2nd through 9th, 2019. This trip to paradise is co-hosted by Javie and Shara from Ending the Sexual Dark Age, Bradford and Angela from the By the By podcast, and special guest Tristan Taramino, author, podcaster, and creator of excellent, ethically produced porn. And you can find more information at swingsetdesire.com.
Oh, Ginger.
What?
Get with the times. Everybody knows about swingsetdesire.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set is hosting its 8th annual trip to paradise. Drop your information in the form at swingsetdesire.com and boom, hot tub happy hour.
No way! I can go there and come there too? There's this super hot harness I've been dying to use.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to swingsetdesire.com and book your trip to join us for the Swing Set Takes Desire, November 2nd through the 9th, 2019.
All right, Dylan, I'm on it. Swingsetdesire.com.
You'll be glad you came.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Vanessa Marin, who is a therapist who specializes in sex therapy. As I was doing some research, Vanessa, I know you talk a lot about female orgasms. And, you know, I took a pause and thought to myself, it's 2019, and yet here we are, very much in a similar place than we were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, in that I know because I teach sex ed to college students and to adults. And there are plenty of women out there who have never had an orgasm, who don't know if they've had an orgasm, certainly many who haven't masturbated. And we've seen the research about the so-called pleasure gap, especially for women who sleep with men, the orgasm gap for women. It is still an issue. I think back to Betty Dodson in the 1970s having these groups in her living room in New York City where everyone looked at their vulva and talked about masturbating and pleasure and got out their vibrators and had these big, like, sort of circle masturbation groups. And there was a big push in the beginning of the women's movement for women to, like, find out more about our own bodies. But that hasn't translated into pleasure and orgasm for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really frustrating to see. I mean, I like to say that my dream is a world where my job doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. I would love to put myself out of business, but it's really frustrating to see that it is taking so long for us to make real change in the ways that we deal with female orgasm. But, you know, that's where we are right now, unfortunately, that it is a challenge for so many women, that there's so much shame and embarrassment that gets thrust upon women's shoulders. So it's really been my purpose in life to help women realize that this is something that can be, this is a topic that can be such a joy to explore, and that it's something that each and every woman deserves.
And, you know, on top of that shame, and sometimes there's religious or cultural shame, there's also just a lack of knowledge. And nowadays, there's also pressure when you're having sex with a partner, right? Everyone, mm-hmm. I don't know how many men say to me pretty much on a daily basis, I want to make my partner come. I want to give her an orgasm. And that just puts pressure. So let's break down some of the myths about female orgasms.
Oh my gosh, where do we start? There are so many. I think the biggest one that comes up in my practice is for women who sleep with men, this myth that women are supposed to orgasm from intercourse alone. That's by far and away the most common question that I get asked is, how do I make myself orgasm during sex? It is something that brings up so much confusion and anxiety and shame and embarrassment for so many women. And it's also gets looped into those questions from male partners as well about, you know, feeling like, oh, I want to make my partner orgasm. How do I get her there during sex? So it's really crazy to me that we still have not been able to fully dismantle this myth and that so many people still believe it. But that is where we are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that question on every college campus I go to. And it's including by women who are like, I can make myself come when I'm by myself. Mm-hmm. But how do I come when I'm having intercourse with my boyfriend? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, we're talking about a totally two separate, entirely separate things. But this also this mythology that sex is this one thing, which doesn't easily bring most women or people with vulvas and vaginas to orgasm, it's still harming us.
Yeah, and I think it also is illustrative of the ways that that orgasm has become very performative. Mm. So I've noticed this interesting shift that even in the last 10 years or so, we finally started talking about female orgasm more openly in, you know, magazines and articles online. It used to be that you would almost never see anything about it. It would sort of be in the fringes of the internet. But as we've been talking about it more and more, now I'm seeing it become increasingly performative. So you're seeing all these articles about, you know, 10 different ways to orgasm and how to have an orgasm in 5 seconds or less and all of your secret hotspots that you've never found before. And it's not encouraging women to explore their bodies or to explore their pleasure in this really joyful, fun, amazing way. It's actually creating this pressure that now you have to have these orgasms, you have to have them in these specific ways, you have to have these specific orgasms. And a lot of times when I get these questions from women, it's not about, you know, man, I love sex with my partner, I love connecting with my partner, I just want to know how to experience even more. It's this, God, I have to do this because my partner is so upset. My partner will break up with me. My partner says that they need me to orgasm. Otherwise, they don't have a good time. And so it's become something that we feel like we have to do rather than something that we want to do because it feels pleasurable and exciting.
Right, right. And you've also talked publicly about your own challenges in this area. I wonder if you might share a little bit of that story.
Absolutely. Yeah, I struggled with orgasm and in particular with orgasming with a partner for about 10 years. And part of that time overlapped with when I was doing some of my sex therapy training. And so I had this added layer of feeling like a horrific imposter. How could I be, you know, training to enter this field and I couldn't figure out something that was so natural and basic and should be so simple, and especially being able to get there on my own and having it be something that was pretty straightforward on my own, but struggling to get there with a partner. So I can really empathize with so many of the feelings that come up for women who struggle to orgasm at all or with their partners. And I also know I remember searching for any sort of answers, any sort of information, and seeing all these conflicting things and not being sure, you know, what was right and is this source trustworthy? And maybe if I tried, you know, this thing, but it was all very perplexing and it just made me feel awful. And so it took a really, really long time. I went through phases where I just thought, you know what, screw this. I don't even care anymore. I faked orgasms for a really long time. I figured it was just something that was not going to happen to me. My body wasn't going to operate in that way. And then periods where I was trying to fix it and find the solution and do all this research. So it's important for me to be transparent about my own story because I can just relate to what so many women go through. And I want women to know that they're not alone. I think that's one of the most frustrating and painful things that come up for women is that we all feel like we're super alone in this. Like we must be the only woman in the world who can't orgasm or hasn't been able to figure it out. So that was my motivation for first starting to share my story.
And I think there's tons of women out there who feel like, my body's betraying me. My body doesn't work the way it should work. Mm-hmm. I'm missing out. I mean, there's all this added sort of stress and anxiety to it, because women also are sort of prized and valued for their sexuality, right? And mm-hmm. so now, in addition to being like a great lover with amazing skills that you learned in Cosmo, you also have to be able to orgasm to qualify as great in bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I got really good at faking them. Oh my God, I could put on some amazing performances. And it was very frustrating for me personally to see what a huge impact faking had on me, that I was really funneling all of that attention into being so performative, into playing this role of this woman who was so sexual and so orgasmic and all of that. You know, every second was devoted to that performance, and it completely detached me from my own body to the point where I just, like, I didn't even know what I was feeling or if I was feeling anything, much less having an orgasm. But it started to feel like I wasn't faking orgasms anymore. I was becoming a fake. So it really impacted me on a lot of different levels.
Oh, you like internalized it.
Oh yeah.
In a deep way. That's, oh gosh, that's really hard. That's rough. And it's rough to kind of break that cycle. And I also feel like it's also not a black or white situation. Like, it's not this person is orgasmic and this person isn't. You know, each time we have sex with a partner, like, different things happen. Your body's in a different place. And so the other thing is, like, I feel like there are women who are incredibly orgasmic but may not have an orgasm tonight for XYZ reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's also okay. I feel like we have to expand this notion of pleasure, and we have to believe women when they say, I had a really good time, that felt really good, I didn't have an orgasm, but, like, that's fine with me. Oh, yeah. Instead of it sort of being like one or the other.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, something that can come up a lot of times around that is that we've created such a narrow definition of what sex can be, and it's become super performative and become, yeah, just incredibly narrow and not leaving any sort of space for creativity or individuality or exploration. And I think it's really coming from, you know, we all want to be good in bed. And I think that that's a completely understandable desire. Like, yeah, I want to be good in bed too. But I think it's created so much anxiety and so much pressure that we've just really squished down our idea of what sex can be now. So sometimes when an exercise that I have my clients do is to, like, write out, what do you think sex is supposed to be? Like, if you're following this script in your head of what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to act and what it's supposed to be like. And so they'll go through and write it out and realize, oh, wow, yeah, this does seem very boring and very one note. But yeah, we've really taken away so much capacity for ourselves to explore and experiment and play.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take another commercial break, hear from our great sponsors. And coming up, we're going to talk about one of Vanessa's courses, which is called, funnily enough, Finishing School, that teaches women how to have an orgasm. I'm super interested in to break that down. So stay with us, listen to these commercials, and then come back for more discussion. We'll be back. Everyone, as you know, anal pleasure holds a spot near and dear to my heart. So let's consider how we're treating our ass across the board, especially when it comes to cleaning it. If you're using dry toilet paper or wet wipes, you're doing it wrong. Switch to Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that cleans all the crap off your butt. It easily attaches to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and provides a precise stream straight to your butthole. Using a Tushy bidet pre-anal play is nice, and of course, after sex to clean up. Go into every experience feeling fresh and confident, and then wipe it all away at the end. I love the Tushy because it's also affordable. It only starts at $69, everyone's favorite number. So do your ass a favor and wash with Tushy. Go to hellotushy.com and get 10% off your order with the promo code SEXOUTLOUD. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy.
Hi everyone, it's Tristan. Are you passionate about sex education and want to build your career in the field, but you're not sure how to do it? Or maybe you've begun your journey as a sex educator and you're ready to get serious, streamline your business, and get paid. My sex educator bootcamp training programs, level 1 and 2, are now available online, and they are great for sexuality professionals of all kinds. You'll learn how to develop your vision and mission and communicate them effectively. Discover tools for branding, marketing, networking, media coverage, building your audience, and more. The number one question people ask me is, Tristan, how did you get involved in sex education and how can I? Well, today is the day to find out. Go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to tristan@puckerup.com. That's tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with licensed psychotherapist Vanessa Marin, who specializes in sex therapy. And before the break, we were talking about female orgasms. And you have a course called Finishing School, which is all about teaching women how to orgasm. So break this down for me. How do you teach women how to have an orgasm, especially without being in the room?
Yeah. So the initial inspiration behind this course was really my own struggle with trying to figure this out and looking for solutions everywhere and finding all these scattered tips and really, you know, not great information, very conflicted stuff. So I kept thinking to myself, you know, there has to be a better way to learn this. This can't be that complicated. I learned how to do it on my own and it was pretty straightforward. Like, you know, this just can't be that difficult. And so I like to think of orgasm as a skill. You know, and like any other skill, it takes time, practice, and patience to learn. So when I started opening my own practice, I was working with a lot of women around this issue and starting to do some exploration of the techniques that I had discovered on my own when I was going through that tricky time, like testing different things with different women, trying out different exercises, and eventually ended up creating a system for how to learn how to orgasm. And again, like, you know, like any other skill, like trying to create specific instructions for it. So yes, our bodies are all unique. We all like different things and there's definitely space for that, but also being able to give women an actual framework for exploring. Because I think the problem is, even though you can find articles online about orgasm, you always see this advice, like just explore. And that would drive me nuts because I would think, you know, yeah, but like, how do I explore? Like, I don't even know what that means. It's such vague advice. So that's what I really set out to create, is like a specific step-by-step system that you could work through that would actually teach you how to explore your body and pleasure and learn how to have orgasms.
See, this harkens back to, remember when it's in the 90s, Dr. Joycelyn Elders, who was then the Surgeon General, said, oh yeah, I think we should teach young people how to masturbate. And everyone lost their fucking minds. And Bill Clinton mm-hmm. actually asked her to resign, which yep. she did. So she was sort yep. of pushed out of the White House. But it is a fascinating idea that we have to learn other things. Like we had to learn to brush our teeth. We had to mm-hmm. learn how to drive. We have to learn how to swim. Like these things aren't natural to us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we accept the fact that you need lessons and coaches and mentors and books and maybe even tests right, to learn this stuff. But then we take sex once again and put it in this totally other category and say, okay, but no, this is just a natural thing. You just have to touch yourself and it's going to work. It's going to be like magic. And mm-hmm. it's not like magic, especially considering the lack of information about that women even have about their own bodies and how they work, mm-hmm. their own anatomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the very first part of it, is going through and actually sharing, here is the truth about how female orgasm really works. Here is the truth about your anatomy and your body. So that's the foundational starting place. And then, yeah, it goes into masturbation. And again, like really getting super nitty gritty, because that advice of, yeah, just touch yourself and explore, it doesn't really help women. So it needs to be something that's more specific and really teaching this idea that it's just like any other skill, anything else that you do with your body. It's like, you know, learning how to ski, learning how to surf. Like, you have to learn. You don't just give somebody a surfboard and say, go explore the ocean, or a pair of skis and just say, go explore this mountain. You know, no. So really giving people specific step-by-step instructions. And then the third part of it gets into learning how to orgasm with a partner. So taking the things that you've learned on your own and translating that into when you're with another person.
And I think people are intimidated by that piece, right?
Oh, yes. Huge. And there are so many different beliefs that come up for women around that. One of the biggest one is this idea that our pleasure is a burden to our partner, mm-hmm. or that it's, you know, it's something that we don't deserve. And, you know, as women, we're really conditioned to be caretakers and to be self-sacrificers. Like, that's the way that we talk about women and praise women is, you know, how much self-sacrificing we can do. And so when it comes to being in the bedroom, it's another way that we're really limiting ourselves and narrowing this definition of sex, because we're so focused on our partner's experience, our partner's pleasure, feeling like we're such a burden, we're so complicated and difficult, because that's the only ways that we talk about female orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
So it creates this huge barrier for women to wanting to explore that with their partners.
And also the very simple notion that there are times when you're going to do something in order to give your partner pleasure, and you may not be getting direct physical pleasure from that thing, whatever it is. But mm-hmm. but we still, like, we give our partners oral sex, right? And we don't, like, complain and say, no, this is just a pain. I'm not getting anything out of this. People are super turned on by pleasing their partners. And so I feel like this notion that, oh my God, I'm going to take too long, or you're really going to have mm-hmm. to concentrate, or this is mm-hmm. going to be like a three-step process, right? Like, we dismiss it sort of without even trying.
Yeah, I mean, I have two thoughts about that. The first one is definitely that we feel really self-conscious about asking our partners to do things when, you know, on the other hand, we feel like we have to do things for our partners. And that's, it's really, you know, it's just not okay that we feel that way, that we feel like we're not allowed to take up any sort of time or space. And the other part of it is that, ironically, you know, I hear this so often from the partners of a woman who's struggling to orgasm, and especially from men, that they genuinely do enjoy pleasuring their partners. And yes, sometimes that can create pressure for the woman, but there also is, you know, there are a lot of people out there who genuinely enjoy being able to focus on their partners, genuinely enjoy, you know, giving to their partners what they get in return. So I think it's just so important for us to recognize, you know, yes, sometimes sex is very fun and pleasurable, and it feels easy and natural. That's actually one of my least favorite words. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes sex is also messy and complicated and makes your muscles cramp up and puts you in awkward positions. Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. totally okay. You know, that's part of it, too. It's that it's not always this perfect pleasure fest from start to end.
Have you also run into, because some women describe their experiences like this to me, where they feel like they've got techniques and skills and everything's feeling really good, and they've gotten to this point where they feel like, okay, I'm at the edge of the cliff and I can't get over it. What do you say to them?
That definitely does come up a lot. And often what I find that traces back to is there's a part of their brain that starts kicking in and thinking, oh, it's been a while, or, oh, this has taken a lot of effort to get me there. And it's sort of just these last final bits of, you know, feeling like we don't deserve it. Like, I've pushed the boundary too far now. I've asked too much. I've taken too much time. And so I think it really brings up this question of deserving it. And that's where a lot of women can get stuck. So that's a big topic that I work with so many of my clients is helping them realize, like, you do deserve this. It's perfectly okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's tricky, to then, like, on the one hand, I don't want to say to folks, like, this is all in your head.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And yet there is this place where people don't feel like they have permission, or they can't give themselves permission, or they're holding on and they can't let go, or they don't want to feel that vulnerable or exposed, or they have unresolved trauma. Mm-hmm. And so it's like there is a point at which you can get in your own way around your orgasm.
Yeah, you definitely can. And I hate the advice to just let go, because nobody's ever been in the moment and told themselves, oh, I need to just let go, and then actually been able to do that. Like, it just doesn't happen that way. But there are, you know, it really comes down to being super present with yourself and your experience in that moment, and being super kind to and respectful of whatever reaction is coming up for you. So yes, very often it is a question of deserving it, where you're kind of bumping against that boundary of, oh, is this, you know, is this okay for me to keep going? But there are definitely tons of other things that can come up in that moment as well. And so if you're able to stay with yourself and track your own experience and say, you know, oh, there's some fear that's coming up for me right now. There's some, you know, some distracting thoughts that are in my head. Actually, maybe my partner just kind of switched their technique right in the last second, and I need to go back to what they were doing before. You know, if we can just stay present with ourselves and give ourselves that permission to make adjustments and to feel whatever it is that we need to feel, then that can go such a long way towards helping us go over the edge too.
But it's so hard. That's another thing, is it's hard. And we have to acknowledge this. It's hard to be in your body. It's hard to be in your body all the time, especially really in a world that tells you what your body is supposed to look like and how it's supposed to behave and what size and shape it's supposed to be. And even, you know, what race and ability it's supposed to have. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to be in your body, and people have different access points. And there are forces working against you, you know. So I feel like this bringing mindfulness into it is really important, and it may take like a number of steps, right? You may be able to be like 100% present for a certain amount of time, and then you feel yourself sort of drifting away, and then you come back.
About one second at a time.
I don't think people should sort of strive to be like, I'm going to be 100% present, 100% in my body today for an hour during sex. Because I think there's too many things working against us there. But the idea of coming back, and also the idea of acknowledging the feelings that come up, right? And that those feelings could be negative. There could be fear. There could be, you could be scared. You could not know what's on the other side of hitting that sort of edge of the cliff. And all of those things can affect your ability then to keep the pleasure going, to keep being there and present. It's a tough proposition.
It is. And I think there's personal work to do around it. And then it's also looking at like the global and political context of all of this. So that's a huge part of finishing school is, you know, talking about the ways that we're socialized to treat our bodies, the messages that we're receiving around the way our bodies look, our shape, our weight, our race, our, you know, our everything. And, you know, really looking into the politics of pleasure, because I think that can actually be super powerful for a lot of women. Sometimes it can be hard to get like fired up about our own experience. But when we think about, you know, wow, there are 3 to 6 year old girls. I read some crazy survey that said, you know, something like 40% of 3 to 6 year old girls are worried about being too fat. You know, so if we can think about some of those things, sometimes that can help us get a lot more fired up and recognize, yes, there are individual skills for us to learn, and there are lots of different ways to do that. And this is a global conversation that we need to have too.
Okay, let's take another break. When we come back, we're going to ask Vanessa the question, which is the title of one of her guides. How much sex should you really be having? We'll break that down for you. Stay with us. More coming up with Vanessa Marin when we get back. Do you know what the month of May represents? Why, May is Masturbation Month. You knew that. We all know that self-care is sexy, and solo sex play is part of self-care. So join the Pleasure Chest as they dive deep into all things masturbation this month. They'll be going live on Instagram all month with free online classes centering self-care and self-pleasure to get you more in touch with yourself and all the benefits masturbation can bring. On May 10th, they'll be exploring femdominance. May 17th, sex and your cycle.
May 24th, expanding your orgasms through solo play. And May 31st, sex toys for the curious. All these live workshops will air at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And during those live classes, there will be specials to take advantage of. Follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram to check out all information on these classes and more. And of course, go to pleasurechest.com to find out about in-store pleasure ed classes, their new products, and of course, their reliable, great customer service.
Are you LGBTQIA, genderqueer or gender variant, a sex worker, an activist, a polyamorous person? Well, the open list features therapists, sexuality and relationship coaches, traditional and alternative healthcare providers, mediators, lawyers, and more who are poly-aware, kink competent, sex positive, queer affirming, and anti-oppression. They work with clients with alternative sexualities and relationship structures, including open relationships, polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, swinging, BDSM, and kink. They serve the unique needs of folks who think and live outside the box. To search for a professional in your area, go to the open list at openingup.net. If you're a professional who'd like to be listed, use the coupon code OPENTRIAL for a free 1-year trial.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, you, if you're a longtime listener, you may already know this, but maybe this is your first time listening. I am working on a memoir about coming of age and coming out, and I'm doing a Patreon to support that memoir. So you can find out more information about it at patreon.com/Tristan Taramino. The story of my first masturbation and orgasm will be in that memoir, folks. So that's just like a little tease for you, a little bit of peace. And I'm releasing pieces of the memoir and drafts of early writing to my patrons before anyone else gets to see it. So if you want to find out about my first orgasm experience before anyone else, then you should become a patron. Okay, we're back with Vanessa Marin. And so Vanessa, you have this guide called How Much Sex Should You Really Be Having? Immediately my hackles go up because the word should is in it. tell me what the answer is. I'm sure it's more complicated than that.
Okay, so I was a little bit sneaky with this one because this is another one of the most common questions that I get asked. How much sex should we be having? And everybody seems to have this idea in their head of some sort of magical number. Very often I hear twice a week. That seems to be, for some reason, so many people have gotten that into their head that this is this magic number. If you have that much sex, then you're all good. So what I actually share in the guide is that there is no magic number, and that thinking about the numbers of it is really ignoring the whole point. It's missing the whole point altogether. So in that guide, I actually walk you through different ways to focus more on the quality of the sex that you're having in your relationship and getting a better sense of your desires, how you can prioritize intimacy in your relationship and what's going to make you feel really good, rather than just trying to come up with some magic number that you think is going to solve everything.
And I just have to out him. My engineer, A-Rod, on the break said that he does have a number, and that number is twice a day. So I'm not shaming him for that. But it did raise an interesting question, which is also something that I hear a lot about from couples, which is there, you know, we all have different sex drives. And then as we age, our sex drive changes. And as we move into different parts of our life, our sex drive changes, our libido. So what if someone does want to have sex every day and their partner doesn't? How do you rectify that kind of incompatibility?
Well, there are so many different factors that go into sex drive. And I think that one of the problems that we come across is that we tend to think of our sex drives as like this fixed number. And that's also what feeds into this, you know, how much sex should we be having question, is we just get really focused on this idea of numbers. And instead, I like to look at sex drive in a really different way and think about what are the situations and contexts that get our sex drives like feeling fired up and active, and what are the situations and contexts that get in the way of us feeling our desire. And really of boiling this whole conversation down to what makes you feel good. So if you have a sex drive that's naturally on the lower end and you feel good about your sex drive, you feel like, you know, you're connected to your body, you make an effort to explore sexuality and sensuality with your partner, and you feel good about your sex life, like that's perfectly fine. But it just really boils down to us being able to explore what do we need to create the kind of sex drive that we want to have and that's going to feel good for us.
Right. And also, like, FYI, people with vaginas have higher sex drives than people with penises. So this isn't a one-sided, we don't want to make assumptions about who has the higher sex drive, even though A-Rod is a cis man. Going to just keep teasing him about it. And I think this also comes back, bringing it full circle, to masturbation, which is that I think that for people who have a higher sex drive or who want sex more often, you know, someone masturbating and being present for that, whether you're talking to them, whether you're sort of cuddling or stroking them. But I think that can be an intimate experience. And for some people who have a high sex drive, they feel like, okay, I connected with my partner and I got off, right? If those are, mm-hmm. if those are the two things that you need, mm-hmm. then you can do it. And so I also think we can't discount the power of masturbation and continue to think about it as I only do that thing by myself.
Definitely. Yeah. And I just want to say, you know, I am a cis woman and I have almost always had a higher sex drive than my male partners. And so it drives me nuts that we still have this stereotype that men always want sex and women are always putting the brakes on it. So that drives me totally crazy. It is definitely not true. And it's a really harmful myth that causes problems in so many relationships. But yeah, I think another great way that we can navigate mismatched sex drives, because the truth is that in every single relationship, you have mismatched sex drives. You're never going to find a partner who wants sex at the exact same time, the exact same kind of sex, every single time you want sex. Like, that's just not going to happen.
It's
myth. So, yeah. So one of the ways that we can navigate those totally normal differences is that we can expand our definition of what sex means. That sex doesn't always have to be this super narrow, you know, 1, 2, 3 kind of step thing, that it can be a lot of different things. And so masturbation is such a great example where, you know, maybe it's even sometimes it's mutual masturbation where you don't have the energy or you don't feel the desire to have this super long, drawn out experience. But hey, you'd be happy to just use your toys with each other and have a quick session. Or it's one partner masturbating and the other partner just being there lovingly and participating in some way. So yeah, if we can be creative, which again is like, that's the joy of sex. That's the way that we get to play as adults. So, you know, there's so many different things that we can explore and learn. So if we can be more expansive in those definitions, it helps in so many different ways.
Okay, we are almost out of time, but I am really intrigued that your entire business is a family business because you work with your husband and your sister.
I sure do. Yes.
How do you not get sick of these people? How do you not get sick of these people and still love them?
Oh, well, I love them both so much. They're very difficult to get sick of. But yeah, we realize that it's definitely a silly sounding thing, a little family sex therapy practice. And both of them actually just joined my business in sort of accidental ways. But we've created this really awesome little team together. And they've both become super passionate about doing this work and about seeing the impact that we're having on people's lives. And we're all also starting to contribute more of our own personal stories. So getting my training as a psychotherapist, you know, I was taught that I'm not supposed to share myself with my clients. And so I operated my business like that for a long time until I started realizing, you know, that's not actually like how I want to show up with my clients. And I don't think that it serves them either. So I started sharing a lot more of my own personal stories. And my husband Xander has kind of jumped in. I'm actually a little bit jealous because the times that he has like written an email to our list or put up a social media post, he gets like double the positive comments that I do. So people seem to like hearing from him as well. But yeah, my sister has been, you know, contributing her own ideas and thoughts as well. So it's just been really fun to be able to open up those conversations, like even within our own little family. I actually just had a conversation with my mom last week about female orgasm for the first time ever. So it's just, you know, it's just, yes, it's changing our own family as well. And it's been great. It's been amazing.
That's fantastic. Okay, well, let me tell my listeners how they can find you. Vanessa's website is vmtherapy.com, and that's also the Twitter handle, @vmtherapy. On Facebook, she is Vanessa Marin Sex Therapy, and on Instagram, she is Vanessa Marin Therapy. So that's how you can go check out her online courses and her coaching program. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
So I want to do a shout out to all the people who contribute their love and labor to this show. Executive producer Karen Dana, senior producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, A-Rod, my engineer, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern for another edition of the show. Until then, you can get me on social media. I'm at Tristan Taramino across all platforms. And the show is on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.